Hi guys, it's me, Lindsay Pinchuk, host of Dear Found Her. Now, on today's episode, you're going to hear me and our guest, Suzanne Citrin, discuss knowing what to charge and how to price your product and services, a definite struggle for so many of us. Now, this all falls into the realm of creating your offer, an exercise that I'm working on right now with the founding member cohort in my group mentorship, Marketing Made Simple for Small Business. We're not just creating the offer, though. We are working together to also create the messaging around and sharing the offer with ongoing intent across all of our content. This in turn has led to some incredible sales for the women in my mentorship group. If you haven't heard of it already, Marketing Made Simple for Small Business is a group mentorship program for women-owned businesses. You'll work to create effective content, messaging, and a marketing process to connect with your community, build awareness, and drive sales. This is a program that combines small group strategy sessions, one-on-one Q&A and accelerator calls, community support, and a ton of digital resources designed to give you the step-by-step instructions and guidance that you need for brand growth. Now, our spring cohort or group of Marketing Made Simple for Small Business is open now, and you can still get in before the end of the month. We have an amazing group of women who have started, and they can't wait to meet you too. Our doors for this group, though, are closing on Sunday or once we enroll the next 10 members. I'm giving Dear Found Her listeners an exclusive discount right now with the code FOUNDHER. You'll get 20% off, plus with the discount, I've also added an amazing bonus, a second one-on-one accelerator call with me for all new annual memberships. That means you'll get two one-on-one hour-long calls with me to discuss your business. And if you've already enrolled for the spring cohort, you get to take advantage of that too. If you have any questions, simply DM me or email me at lindsay@lindsaypinchuk.com. You can click the link in the show notes for more information on Marketing Made Simple for Small Business. And now, on to the show. Following 30 years of consulting experience across all industries and sectors, and after two pivots, today's guest, Suzanne Citrin, founder of Blue Birch Consulting, knew that she could make her biggest impact among business leaders in North America by implementing a strong leadership culture within their organizations. Blue Birch Consulting was founded to help leaders grow, evolve, and feel more confident. But today on the show, we're not just talking about leadership principles. We're talking about how Suzanne led with her heart and left corporate America to start her own business over 20 years ago. When this really was not a thing or a common norm for women in business. She's a leader for all women and someone everyone here can learn immensely from. I cannot wait for you to hear us talk about the marathon of starting your own business, using each season as a way to build upon the foundation of your business, pricing your services, managing your time, and so much more. Without further ado, come on in and meet today's guest, Suzanne Citrin, founder and principal of Blue Birch Consulting. Dear Founder, I'm your host, Lindsay Pinchuk. At 30 years old, I founded my first company with just $500, building it to reach 3 million people and generate seven figures in revenue for 6 years straight, all before I sold it. A decade later, I exited with one goal, to support other women in business through their own entrepreneurship journeys. As an entrepreneur, you wear every hat. You burn the midnight oil, and most of all, you pour your heart and soul into everything you do. But there's no blueprint for success. Every week on Dear Found Her, you'll get to sit in as I pick the brain of some of my closest female founder contacts. Save yourself time, money, and hassle listening to the lessons of those who have already done it. You'll also have the chance to hear about my own founder journey, how I built my first company, and now how I'm building my second, as I share solo episodes filled with actionable lessons and steps that you can apply to your business immediately. Make sure to subscribe now so that we can build our businesses together each and every week. Now, let's get into today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Dear Founder. I am so excited about today's guest because I think each and every one of you who are listening has something to learn from Suzanne Citrin, who is the founder and principal of Blue Birch Consulting. Suzanne and I have become very close over the last few months, and I myself have learned a lot from Suzanne just by working with her and by being in her orbit and by interviewing her on a regular basis for some of her own social media content. Suzanne often doesn't realize how impactful she is, and I really wanted her to be here to share her knowledge and wisdom with all of you, because she created a business, a company of her own, a consultancy, before most women were doing that. She left the workplace because she wanted to be around for her kids, and she has had a thriving, successful business for over 20 years. And so we're going to dig in today, and we're going to let Suzanne tell us how she did it. So Suzanne, welcome to Dear Founder.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you're here too. So you know how I feel about you and your business, and I just think it is amazing what you've built. And as I've gotten to know you and gotten to learn about how this kind of came to be, it really is remarkable the steps that you took when most women were not doing that. I mean, now you look around us, there are a lot of female business owners, small business owners, female founders of all shapes and sizes. But 20 years ago, most women who were working were either working in corporate America and having a 9-to-5, or they were leaving when they had children. And you created a path for yourself and did both. And so I'd love for you to give us a little bit of background and tell us your story about how you got to the point where you made this decision. I want you to kind of give us your story.
I'm happy to. And I appreciate your kind of recognition of that, because I didn't even necessarily put it in that frame of reference before. But so the quick story is, I obviously went to work out of college, had a few really interesting jobs that transitioned me into this world of what was called organization development. And that's basically all the people things within an organization. And so in the mid to late 90s, I was working inside of an organization while pursuing my MBA part-time. And I happened to work for a woman who, I'll just put a kind of a pin in that. She was my boss at the time, became a business partner to me. But so when I completed my MBA, I knew that I wanted to get some big consulting experience, because I thought, no matter what I choose to do in life, if I can get some big experience and get a chance to really get exposed to different kinds of projects, high level Fortune 100, management consulting, like, A, I would want to be able to kind of check that off my list that I did it. I was able to do that. But I also knew that that would take me wherever I wanted to go. So I did that for 3 years. And during that time, I got married and I got pregnant with my first child. And when I went to go take my maternity leave from this large consulting firm, I knew I wanted to go back, although I knew then I had no desire to go down the partner track. That wasn't where I saw myself going. But interestingly, they were so kind to me. They allowed me to come back post-maternity leave part-time, which was really unheard of. I went back into the office 3 days a week, worked a fourth day at home, and then had Fridays off. And they kept me on in-town projects. And this was a multinational, international consulting firm where there were plenty of out-of-state projects. So it was so kind, but it also made me realize that I think I had created a reputation where they respected me enough and wanted to keep me to do that. That being said, I started formulating in my head that there was an exit path for me. And so I decided after 3 years working there that I wanted to start my own thing, which was scary. To your point, it was scary, but I mentioned this woman who was my boss in the mid 90s. She had left the company we were at together to start her own consulting firm in 99. And we stayed very close. And so I knew I had a place to land if I chose to go off on my own, which, I'll be totally honest, that makes it easier. Additionally, one of the partners at my consulting firm offered to bring me on as a subcontractor the day after I left to start my own thing. So it was a softer landing, but I decided to take the leap. So I believe it was 2002. I left this firm. I had gotten some great experience. I checked the box that I wanted to check, and I started my own practice, but joined forces with my former boss, now business partner. And even though I incorporated myself, I marketed it under her previously established brand, and we worked together for 20 years.
So I want to point that out because I think this is a really important lesson to people listening who might want to start something on their own. You did start something on your own, but you had this ulterior plan and you had, I don't want to say a backup, it wasn't a backup, but you had support in a way that was very different than you leaving and starting your own company. So I think it's important to recognize those opportunities when you are going to take the leap and leave. And it's not to discredit anything, but I think that it was really smart of you to do it that way. So I'd love for you to kind of talk to us about you joined forces with your former boss and kind of what that looked like. And then what was the pivot that led you to Blue Birch Consulting?
Okay. So I joined my former boss. We were super good friends, but we had very different working styles, interestingly. But she had established this brand, Red Rooster Consulting. And all the while I was at this large firm, I'd been having conversations with her. And I think it was always in her plan and hoped it would be in my plan to join her. But the way I structured it was I literally created my own corporation. I was Suzanne Citron Inc. But no one out in the market saw me as Suzanne Citron Inc. They saw me as part of Red Rooster Consulting. She had already established a bit of a brand presence in the market. She had website, marketing materials, everything. And it just made sense to roll up underneath her. Plus, keep in mind, I'm a new mother now. I have a small child, and I wasn't super jazzed about business development. I wanted to do good work. I wanted to continue to be out in the market, but I didn't have the energy or the bandwidth to necessarily do a bunch of business development. So while I did take one client with me when I went off on my own, and that did give me the peace of mind you're talking about, and there's nothing wrong with it. You need peace of mind because it's already a leap of faith to do this. So to know that I had a quote unquote partner, but also a built-in client, where I had a proven track record because I did work for him as a partner at the firm he was at before I went off on my own. That certainly helped. And I just kind of built it from there where Rosemary and I did plenty of work together. I was what you would call her second chair. She would staff me on projects. But then I also had built my own client relationships through, for example, one of the first people I met in business school, literally the first day of business school at orientation, became the CEO of a huge company and took me with him. And I worked for his organizations, and he was at a few different organizations for probably 8 years as I was building my business. So that was tremendous opportunity and huge. So I feel like I did both things. I did a lot of work for Rosemary and her clients, and I started to incrementally build my own practice while making space to be a young mother. I had a second child while I was early in my career. I actually have a funny story about being in the hospital, delivering my second child while we were pitching a huge opportunity for Red Rooster Consulting. And I remember Rosemary asked me to review a deck. And it's like, I need 48 hours and then I can do it.
It's funny that you say that. I was dictating emails during my second labor and delivery because she was early and I thought she was going to be late. And we had this event in LA and I obviously knew I wasn't going, but I was helping to get it set up. And so she was early and my employee, my number two, was there and I was dictating emails to her. And then finally I said to her, okay, you just have to tell everyone that like, we'll get back to them. So it's so funny that you say that. I didn't know that.
At a certain point, you got to tap out.
Correct. And that's part of life as an entrepreneur and life as a business owner, right? So, Okay, so when was it that you decided to pivot and start Blue Birch?
2 years and 2 months ago. So recently. And that was kind of a natural evolution. Rosemary has been doing this 11 years longer than I have. She definitely had started communicating her plan for her future. And I started realizing I was at a really pivotal time. Now my kids, fast forward, they're out of the house. We've become empty nesters. It was really important to me to continue to build something that had legs, that gave me purpose, that allowed me to do work that was really meaningful. And I needed to create a brand that was more outward facing in the market beyond being part of Red Rooster Consulting that could carry me into this next part of my career. So through conversations with trusted advisors and people I really respected, and a lot of time thinking about what should this brand be, I launched Blue Birch Consulting in February of 2022.
And tell us a little bit about what it is and what it is that you do. What is Blue Birch Consulting?
Blue Birch Consulting is a leadership development and what I call talent optimization consultancy. So basically, it's this idea that people are the bridge that connect business strategy to business results. And successful organizations recognize that if we don't invest in people, it doesn't matter what we are here to try to do, we will not be successful in accomplishing it. So I help organizations place value in people, build leaders, individual leaders and leadership teams to really help optimize the people within an organization.
And I also want to point out that you do still have a business with Rosemary that's a second business, and you are very close, and it wasn't like you left. And I just want to point that out, that this was I wanted you to go through all of those steps because you didn't get here overnight, but you have had your own company under yourself for 20 plus years, but you have taken very methodical, thoughtful steps to get there. And I think that that's really important to point out to anyone, female or male, who's starting their own company.
Yeah, very true. And I appreciate you noticing that. Yeah. And Rosemary and I have a phenomenal relationship. We do actually, we are 50-50 partners in a business where we support a 12-month leadership development program called Living as a Leader. And we talk regularly. We still plan together. We're obviously still very good social friends. So I tell her and I talk about her in the third person to many people about, obviously it takes someone who is a really good boss to want to become partners with and to maintain a 30 plus year friendship and business relationship with.
Thank you for saying that. I think it's so important for people to hear and for people to recognize, because I do think all too often people think, people just made this decision and jumped ship and whatever. And that is not what happened here. And Rosemary was instrumental in putting you in a place where you could have your own business and then have your own business.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I want to go back to something you just said. You talked about when you first left to join Rosemary, how you had a client already in the making and that was a soft landing. And that struck a chord with me because that is how I started this consultancy. My own company that I built and sold became my first client. And that was really, that was kind of the, I guess, arrangement that led me to be able to do what I'm doing now. And to your point, it was a much softer landing, knowing, even though it was a short-term project, I think it was 12 weeks, that I had this client at the ready. But I want to talk about getting clients, because even though you had that client and I had that client when I first started, you really, you know, getting clients is something that a lot of people in my mentorship and my clients say to me, how do I find new clients? How do I get new clients? Yeah. And, you know, you also said, you know, your network was very important. You went on to work for someone who you were in business school with. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the networking component and how that's led to securing clients and a client pipeline?
Yeah, such a great question. And I will be honest to say at times it felt super scary, right? Because anytime you're in business for yourself, it's feast or famine. You eat what you kill, all those expressions that people talk about. And anyone who knows me and has worked with me knows that I would go through this cycle of, I'd be so incredibly busy and I'd almost be stressing about how I could find enough time in the day to get what I need to get done. And then that project would inevitably end, as projects do. And at first I'm thrilled, like I can breathe, I can do other things that have been put on the back burner. And then all of a sudden, it's usually like at the 3 week mark, I'm like, oh God, where's my next meal coming from? And it always inevitably works out, because it's funny, my early career, I actually taught sales. I was a sales trainer and I would teach prospect management and pipeline development. So I think about that, right? You have to have things at different stages of the sales pipeline in order to backfill for the thing that either closes or falls off because it didn't close. And so I try to do that, but to me, it was organic and intentional, both at the same time, right? Like, I feel really proud of the fact that I built this very strong network that created a ton of repeat and referral business. So that was the bulk of the work, especially early on. Right? Like, I never did just one project.
Can I ask you, did you ever, like, when you finished up a project, did you reach out to people and say, I'm taking on new clients? Or was it really more of a reactionary, people would reach out to you and say, I have this project, are you taking on clients?
Or a little bit of both? It was a little bit of both, but I will say, if there's one thing about me, it's I try to be a really intentional person. So I wasn't as good at business development during intense client billable work as I should have been to build that pipeline I just referred to. But I was always, and to this day, I'm still very intentional when I am wanting to think about networking and prospecting. I try to be intentional about it and block out time to make sure that I'm leveraging my network. So it was both. Like, inevitably someone would come up out of seemingly nowhere at just the right time and an opportunity would avail itself. But at the same time, I have to give myself some credit, but it's because I was doing things like we were attending conferences. We were sending out e-blasts before I was smart enough to engage with you, Lindsay. There were things that I was doing clearly that helped create what we call recency.
Well, so that was like that segues very nicely into what I wanted to ask you, because you have not had a presence on social media. You have not done like such robust marketing. However, what you have done is you have told people what it is that you do. And now you're just going to be telling more people what you do on social media and through LinkedIn. But you have told people what you're doing and you have let people know that you're taking clients, which I think is the first step for any service-based business. You know, a lot of people say to me, I don't know how to get a client. I can't get clients. And I'm like, well, have you told people what you're doing? Right. And, you know, usually people say no. But like you just said, I sent emails. I was purposeful in my marketing. I made sure to go to conferences. Those are all very basic grassroots methods that are tried and true that if you are a service-based business, you should be doing. And it's in addition to social media or online marketing or whatever it is, but those things work.
They do. They really do. I have to remind myself of that, because for as long as I've been in business, I've had business. So that is attributed to something.
Well, right. And it's being intentional, even if it wasn't intentional online. And I point that out because everyone always puts all their eggs right now in the social media basket. You are the reverse. You have not done that. And now you are looking to use social media to really build up your area of expertise and authority. And that's what we're working on together. However, you have been very intentional in a lot of the ways that most people today are not. They don't think to do those basic grassroots, you know, strategies that really are what fill the bucket.
Yes. And I say to you and to others, it's not like I'm getting my clients through Instagram, right? I mean, my clients are large organizations, or I've had the pleasure lately of working with a lot of like health tech, fintech startup organizations. They're not finding me on Instagram. I understand the reason to use it. And there's a lot of other objectives I'm trying to accomplish by broadening and lifting up my social media strategy. But there have been a lot of very basic elements that I've tried to do over the course of my career. And keep in mind, because I've been doing this longer than social media has been around, of course. So you had to get creative.
That's why it's important to bring that up. Like that's why I wanted to point that out. Like, I just feel it is so important for people not to put all their eggs in one basket, whether it's just grassroots, you know, tactics or just social media. It really should be a combination for all of the variety of reasons that you just said, that, you know, we use different tactics and strategies for different reasons. And that's what you've done and what you're doing. And I just want to reiterate, because so many people in my own network and in my mentorship are like, I don't know how to get clients. And it's just those little networking, you know, once you start telling people, this is what I do. You know, and that's the first thing. This is what I do. A lot of people probably don't even know.
100%. And very quickly, I like to think about something that happened very recently where I ended a huge client engagement just because I'd been working with them for a year and they were going through changes in September of this past year. And I decided to dedicate the month of October to intentional networking. Like, I hadn't tapped into my network in a while. I had been fortunate that I didn't need to because I was so busy, but I was like, I'm taking October and I'm going to be intentional. Literally the first person I reached out to was a former partner. The one who hired me, I didn't even think about this. The one who hired me on day one of starting my own business. I reached out to him first. He's now the CEO of a large organization. He said, your timing couldn't have been better. We are going through some significant changes. I want to connect you to so-and-so. And next thing you know, that has led to 5 different projects in 6 months.
Just because you reached out.
Yeah.
It's so important to share these stories, because I think a lot of times the basic nature of business just gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, it does.
So I want to kind of shift direction at the moment, and I want to talk about how your business has impacted your family, because this was a very big reason why you left corporate America. You wanted to be present for your kids. You do have a business and have had a business where you have worked very hard and a lot. You have a big business. So how has this impacted your family, and how have you been able to manage your family and your business? Because running a business is not just going to work every day. It's going to work every day and then running the business.
Yeah. Well, I first have to say, I feel tremendously blessed and privileged that I was able to find a childcare provider. I could afford to have a childcare provider in my home from the day my firstborn was 3 months. So she stayed with us for 16 years. And the only reason she didn't stay longer is because it became time. I mean, I wish I could have, because she was family. So just purely from a headspace and just physical care for my growing family, I had the most trusted person, and I was fortunate. And I always said, no matter what I make from this business, I have to be able to support this childcare provider, or it won't be worth it, and it will feel really wrong to have. So thankfully, I was able to do that and more. But that helped a lot. And at the same time, I worked from home for the most part, which had its pluses and minuses, I will say. When you have small kids and you're trying to work from home, that is not easy. And I had to have really honest communication with my childcare provider. But it was also having a partner who really respected the work that I did, even though it wasn't full time. It wasn't the same level of work that my husband was doing. He never made me feel less than or that my work didn't matter as much as his. And keep in mind, I come from a really strong, independent mother. So I was just raised to be a strong, independent person. There are strengths and there are pros and cons to that, I'm sure, from my husband's perspective. But we had really open communication. We shared a lot of responsibilities. So those elements contributed to me being able to do this, which I recognize not everyone has. And I want to be sensitive to that. Additionally, because I had my own business, and for the most part, unless I was on a really structured project that required me to be somewhere, which I had projects where I was on client site 3-4 days a week, and I just had to really offload things on the home front to my childcare provider, my husband, and others. But when I had the flexibility, which a lot of my work allowed me to, I was very involved in school activities, in being a room parent, in being a lunchroom mom, in being there for the kids' shows, sporting events. And again, that is a privilege and a blessing that I was allowed to do that. And I would say 90% of the time, my work allowed for that flexibility. And then I would have to appreciate the downtime when I wasn't as busy that I could do more of that. And there wasn't someone counting on me to put food on the table. So that allowed me to breathe a little bit in those in-between moments.
I love that you said something that also resonates with me so much, was that when I first started Bump Club and I made the decision to leave corporate America, we had a nanny and we decided to, it was a nanny share, and we wanted to maintain the nanny. And so the goal for my business the first year was simply to pay the nanny, and because that was it. And I paid the nanny before I paid myself. And so, you know, which leads me to something you and I have talked about a lot, and that is having your team in place. And your team doesn't always include employees. It includes the people who support you in your business as a business owner. And for you and I, that was our childcare providers. You know, for other people, that might include, you know, the DoorDasher or the Instacart shopper. I mean, those are members of your team that help you, right? So you have to know when to your point, offload certain things for your own sanity, right?
Absolutely. I think I'm a good delegator. I'm a good empowerer. And so it makes it easier. Some people struggle with that. Some people have a hard time letting go of control and they want things done a certain way. I recognized that I have to empower the people on my team to do certain things. And even if it's not exactly the way I would have done it, that is okay.
And that would be the same if they were your team at work too.
Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, that's what I coach leaders every day. Leaders, the number one thing they're really not good at is empowering and delegation. And a lot of times it's because they like to control the deliverable, the end result. And they know I'll do it better if I just do it myself. That doesn't work.
And it's so funny because almost every successful entrepreneur that I've interviewed recently, as of late, you know, has said or made some kind of comment to the effect of, well, I just had to let it go. And I had to know that it wasn't going to be the way I wanted it done, but that's helped me to grow my business. And so that definitely goes on both sides of your team, whether it's an internal corporate team member or an external team member that's supporting you. I mean, you cannot grow if you are not delegating, period.
Absolutely. 100%.
So I want to talk a little bit about time management because it's something that has come up a little bit between you and I. And I think that you are so good at it. And I do. And I like your time blocking technique and just, I don't think you realized it until I asked you about it. No. Like, right? Like, but then when you told me about how you time block and how you print out your paper calendar, and I'm going to have you talk about it in a minute. I mean, I was like, oh God, I got to do this because, and I've started to implement some of the things that you've shared with me through our work together in my own daily life. I mean, I want to work out. And so I block it in my schedule and I literally have followed what you have shared with me. And I think for anyone who is starting a business, whether they have young kids or are empty nesters, this, you know, you have to make time for yourself. You have to make time for other things. as business owners, a lot of times we just want to work on our business because we love what we do for the most part. That's why we're doing it. So I'd love for you to share with us a little bit about those time management skills and techniques, because you really seem to have it down to a science.
Oh God, you're sweet. And I try to be, you know, I don't want to be the cobbler's son who has no shoes, because that is something that is part of my coaching practice. So many people, and I obviously coach leaders, they're not the best at time management. And it's one of those things where a lot of the work that I do has a longer runway, right? So technically, I could just put it off till, you know, the few days before, the day before, and kill myself getting it done to deliver. And I'm not going to tell you that's never happened or a version of that has never happened, but I really try to prevent that from happening by doing this thing called time blocking, which I did not invent, obviously, but I really try to practice. And it's taking, it's also called big rocks, by the way. It's taking a big rock and chopping it up into smaller rocks and then placing those rocks over the course of your schedule. So yes, I try to do that on Sunday nights in particular. I'm not old school in that I don't walk around with a paper calendar, which I know some people do. I do everything on my phone, but on Sunday nights, I like to print my week at a glance. And I do this thing where I physically put blocks around the already scheduled events in my week so that I can visualize where my open pockets of time are. And then I take a longer term project and I break it down. And by the way, I've already scoped what the pieces are within that longer term project. So I know what the smaller tasks are, and I place those into those open blocks of time. And it clears my head to know that I have allocated that thing somewhere. And so it doesn't have to occupy space in my head anymore because I've put it down somewhere. And then I have that physical week at a glance in front of me all week. And when I do the thing, I check it off. So that's one thing, is I make sure. And in addition to the work tasks, I do what you're talking about. Exercise is so important to me as well. And so I am fortunate that for the most part, I can schedule my meetings at the times that work for me so that I can carve out time. Now that time may be 9 a.m, it may be 5 p.m, it may be 1:30, where I find 30, 45, 60 minutes. I know 60 minutes of exercise, which was like a set practice earlier on. That's like a crazy amount of time now to me. I do 30 or 45 minutes and I feel great. But I block those out too. And I do my best not to schedule client meetings because I prioritize that when I can. So that's time blocking.
Hi guys, it's Lindsay Pinchuk, host of Dear Found Her. As entrepreneurs, you wear so many hats, don't you? Sometimes it's hard to know how and when and who to hire for help. But I want to say, finding Hivecast to produce my podcast has been a godsend. They've been producing Dear Found Her since season one, and honestly, I'm not sure what I'd do without them. Each week, I give them everything that they need to create the episodes that you hear. And not only do they produce and put out the episode, but they create all the awesome marketing materials that you see to promote it. They save me so much time, and honestly, their rates don't break the bank. What I love about them is that they make podcasting accessible to any small business owner who wants to create a podcast. I know that many of you have reached out to them already, but I just want to say, if you're thinking about a podcast of your own, reach out to the Hivecast team. I promise they will make it seamless from the start. You can find them through the link in the show notes. And now back to the episode. So we've talked a little bit about networking and getting clients. We've talked about time management, and we've talked a little bit about balance and how your business has affected your family. One of the other things that I want to ask you about in terms of having your own business is something I asked you about yesterday. I came to you and I said, like, I know you are technically my client, but I have a question for you. And I think, and your answer was very well received. And I think everyone needs to hear it, because this comes up all the time with clients, is how to price yourself and how to put value on yourself. And just like with everything we've discussed today, you have a process for that. And I think it's really important to share because people don't know, like people don't know what they're worth. They don't know how to value themselves. They don't know how they should price a project or what it might be, especially if you're doing this for the first time. So I'd like to kind of just dial it back to the basics and really give some tips to people who have service-based businesses as to how they should be coming up with their pricing structure.
Yeah. This has taken me some time, and I do have to give Rosemary credit for really helping me understand my worth and my value. She's pushed me along the way. But like truly, because so much of the work I do requires a scoping process, I try to be as realistic as possible about what it's going to truly take to execute what my client is asking for successfully. And while I don't want to pad it in any way, I also don't want to shortcut it. So that's first of all what I need to do. I wasn't always great about being honest with myself about the true amount of time it takes to get something done. And so scoping is what gets me to my fees. And so when I wasn't doing the best job of that, it didn't change what I ended up doing to deliver something to my clients. So then I just ate that. That was on my own dime. And so now what I've gotten better at is being super thoughtful. And part of it is just the experience of having done it so many times. But like, I'm very realistic about what it's going to take to execute something. So that's one part of it. And the other part I've gotten better at is my hourly rate, right? Like I know what the market bears and I've gotten more confident in saying, this is what someone with my set of skills, my experience, my background is worth. And I charge that. And I feel really good about it now. Now, granted, it's taken me a while, but
well, I was going to say to you, like, what would you tell someone who I have these conversations all the time with my clients and I know what I say to them, but I think it's important to hear it from someone else too. Like, you know, I have so many clients who are like, well, but like, I'm afraid if I raise my prices that no one's going to transact with me. No one's going to hire me. Like, am I doing myself a disservice? And I always say like, no, you cannot discount yourself. You have to know your worth and you need to be confident about what you're charging. But what else would you say to women who are just so in their head about what it is that they're putting out there in the world?
I would say, one thing I would say is, okay, be comfortable. If they say no, that's okay. And I know it doesn't feel okay in the moment, but you'll feel better about yourself. The other thing I would say is, there's a couple different formulas you can have in your head. What you know you deserve to charge, and that should be what you put out there. What you are willing to possibly discount it to based on whatever factors exist, like a previous relationship, if it's a not-for-profit, what, you know, if you know what they're navigating. And then the third thing is your walkaway point, what you won't do it for, and feel really good about that, because all you're going to do is end up super resentful. Now, you may decide, this is going to get me some great experience, so I'm willing to do it for Y instead of X, because it's going to build my portfolio. It's going to be something I can market to others. Then you're owning that. You're in the driver's seat still. But you have to think about all that ahead of time so that you really feel confident and good about what you're putting out there, and then stand behind it. And trust me, I have yet to have someone tell me that's out of range. That's crazy unrealistic. It just hasn't happened. That doesn't mean that someone hasn't come back and said, totally makes sense. Here's why we have to pay X minus 10%. And I'm willing to do that in certain situations.
Right. And I appreciate you saying that, because I do think there are sometimes outside factors, what it could lead to in the future, who you're working with. I mean, I think there's so many different things to come into play, but I also just think then there are people who are like, you know, like we just don't want to pay that. Well, then I'm not the right person
yes.
for you.
Yes.
And that's okay too.
It is 100% okay.
Because something
it's
else
probably a really good thing to experience. Yes.
Right. So I have two more questions that I want to ask you. So, you've had this incredible career, and it is so admirable what you've built and what you've been able to do and how you've been able to tie your career into your personal life and live the life that you want to live. And I love hearing your stories and hearing about all the things that you have done thus far. I also know that you are wanting to set yourself up for future possible pivot. So I'd like for you to tell us about that and how what you've built is going to potentially lead you to do other things in the future.
So I've been really thoughtful about this next phase of my career and launching Blue Birch Consulting, as I mentioned, was a reflection of that. I want to keep doing the work that I'm doing that has impact on organizations. I love coaching leaders. I love working with leadership teams. I'm just fascinated by team dynamics in general. I think it's so cool to see. And so I love helping a team be a better version of themselves. But I don't aspire to grow this practice such that I would turn around and sell it. That's not on my 10-year plan. But what is more on my 10-year plan, 5-year, 10-year plan is to just further develop my thought leadership and be seen as a thought leader in the things that matter to me most and the things that I've been able to build expertise on over the course of my career. I would love to do speaking engagements. I would love to be on more podcasts. I would love to potentially have board positions that allow me to provide a role or a service leveraging my knowledge and my expertise. So it's about having the opportunity to work that adds value to others, that adds value for me, that makes me feel a sense of purpose, connection, commitment, community. Those are all things that are part of my very embedded value system. And so I want a chance to do work that allows me to live those.
So one of the reasons I asked you that and I wanted to share it is because I do want to point out to people who are listening that all of our careers go in waves and seasons, right? And so you are recognizing certain things about your life right now that you still want to be working. And just as you did when you left the original corporation to come work with Rosemary, you know, you made that change. And I think it's very commendable. Yeah. So I just think it is very commendable for you to be able to recognize that seasons do change and you have different wants and needs, but that you still want to stay rooted in the work that you've grown for yourself. And so that's why I asked that, because I think a lot of times we see things as black and white and like, you know, if I sell my business, then I can't do this, or it's not black and white. And we all have these experiences to give us further experiences. And you are an example of someone who has leveraged every one of your work and career experiences to build something bigger and better for yourself. And it's amazing.
Oh, thank you. I am trying. I am nothing if not intentional. And I feel really strongly, you know, I have this passion about longevity and kind of researching like what makes a meaningful, purposeful life. And it is to feel purposeful and connected and sense of community. And so those are really important to me. And I want to be intentional about continuing to carve the path that I want for myself at this stage of life.
So I have one more question, same question I ask at the end of every episode. And that is, what are three actionable tips that you would give to a woman who is just starting out with her own business?
Great question. Have a plan, but be flexible about that plan. And I believe in vision, mission, value kind of things. So like, what is your vision for yourself? And the vision is that bold, audacious goal, and have that be that thing that's out there that you never quite achieve. Your mission is, what are you there to do every day, and try to make decisions that align with that. But know your values. Not only know your value, but know your values, because you have to make decisions and take actions that align with your values. And when you get off track of that, that is a problem. So I would say that's kind of three things actually, but be willing to change your mind, right? And learn from people who've come before you. I really believe that. And be open to listening and don't think you have all the answers, right? And be open to listening and changing your mind and learning and growing from those who've come before you.
Suzanne Citrin, founder and principal of Blue Birch Consulting. I feel so fortunate that you have come into my life and into my orbit. And I am so excited to share this with our community. You don't realize that I learn from you every day, but I do. And I'm so excited for this next phase of your career. I hope people will follow you. We're linking it in the show notes because Suzanne is going to be starting to share more of her own knowledge and experience and wisdom on Instagram. And I can't wait to see where this goes.
Thank you, Lindsay. I've loved doing this. I really appreciate it.
So in case you missed it, we close out each episode with our number one takeaway from our conversation. My top takeaway from Suzanne today is that basic principles of networking and business development work to drive client acquisition. You cannot solely rely on social media or digital media. Implementing the basic strategies can fill your pipeline and drive years of ongoing business. Suzanne did this without embracing social media until just recently. I want to thank you so much, Suzanne, for joining us today and to everyone who tuned in and listened. We've been getting so much love for season 3, and you have all been so gracious with your time, leaving us so many amazing reviews. One Hungry Monkey recently wrote, "My only regret is not meeting Lindsay years ago. I love every second of each episode. It's like business consulting. Thank you." I also want to thank One Hungry Monkey for delivering me some delicious banana bread for me and my family. Check them out online, One Hungry Monkey, on Instagram, and give them a shout. They are amazing, and I could barely get my hands on the banana bread before my kids almost devoured it. If you liked today's conversation, I would love it if you left a 5-star rating or review as well so that others can find us here on the podcast app. All you have to do is go to ratethispodcast.com/dearfounder or click the link in the show notes to leave a review wherever it is that you podcast. And if you know someone who we should meet, send them our Meet a Founder link in our show notes. We'll introduce them to our community on our social media and on our website later this year. But for now, I want to thank you for listening and thank you for being here. Have a great rest of the week, and we will see you on Thursday.